Chris and Christine, Albert and Gage are appearing with Strings Attached at our Strings on Grass series coming up on November 13th after being rescheduled two times because of rain in Austin. So we're here to talk a little bit about the two of them and some questions from me that I've pulled together, as well as maybe a few things about, you know, working with Strings Attached and a few reflections on that to kind of relate it to that show, to get people excited about coming to the show, to get people curious and have them intrigued, hopefully, a little bit. And since this is a show that, you know, how Strings Attached works is that we have this sort of one-time experience when we get together with singer-songwriters and you know, reimagine their music, sometimes to an extreme level. Like when we do a Beatles tribute show, we reimagine the songs, or we, you know, less extreme, we work with singer-songwriters in the Austin area, like Eliza Gilkison, Slade Cleaves. We've done this for many years, just to let people know who are listening to this what our kind of formula is, and bring to the table, you know, certain things like jazz improvisation, or just, you know, Karen Mall will be singing maybe on a few tunes back up to give these songs a different color so that people get to hear them again in this one-time experience. And they may not hear it like this for a long time. So we try to create a, you know, something that's intriguing to people to come out and hear your music slightly different, you know, with different color, different reimagining. So that's the first thing I wanted to ask you, is like, and you could just talk a little bit about, if you remember, we had a show about 15 years ago, I think, or maybe 10, 15 years ago.
Has it been that long?
Probably, yeah, I think probably so. Yeah. I think it has.
I don't know. Yeah, and it was at St. David's Church, which is a beautiful space. And, yeah, it's a distant memory for me. I mean, I'm curious if you remember anything specifically about working with us with regard to that kind of formula that was notable, fun, exciting. Or anything that you know about Strings Attached, just what we do out in the community and that kind of stuff. So the first question is there anything notable that you remember from that first performance? Or maybe you just remember, you know, from working with us over the years.
I just remember being thrilled to hear our songs, and like you said, envisioned by someone else, and everybody has a different take on music, and some people come from a more classical background, and some people have a little more jazz. And you know, I do this gig at Strange Brew every week, where I'm playing with somebody different every week, and it's a lot of times the same songs, but each person is going to bring something different to it. And what you do with Strings Attached is a real inventive, and plus you have a core group of people that do this a lot, and so they know what you're thinking when you write an arrangement, and they can help you bring it to life. And it's just real exciting for me.
Yeah, I think every artist has sort of a fantasy of hearing their music with strings or with an orchestra, and more arranged in that way. It makes it, for me, it brings an elegance to the music that we try and bring that to our performances at Don's Depot, but it's not always there. It's not always that elegant.
I turn on the string machine sometimes.
So it was really, especially at St. David's and that beautiful environment, it was very almost mystical. And I imagine the Strings on Grass is a different kind of environment, yeah, but also brings sort of just a natural, organic beauty to it that probably complements. I would imagine that it really complements the music to be in that environment.
Exactly. Yes, that's it's the same approach that we were taking with the original Strings Attached series in the church, was that context. When people walk into it, you know, it's, again, it's not just about hearing the music directly, but it's the environment that you're in. It really affects the emotional receiving, you know, of the song. It's like, or the music. So the same thing, you're right, with Strings on Grass, we're in this beautiful, gorgeous yard with, you know, large trees, and there's lights shining up in the trees, and the stars, and something about hearing music, you know, in nature, in a natural setting, it's very different from St. David's, and but I think it's very natural. Like, you know, we all, for instance, Kara and I love Kerrville. We love going to Kerrville Folk Festival and being around the campfire. So there's a little bit of that campfire feeling, you know, and yeah, we really enjoy it. So people are coming for the experience, the full-on, you know, like a full immersion, you know, in nature music experience. So that's what they can look forward to hearing your songs. And makes me think, like, we should have, is there any nature songs in there? Really? Maybe we should pick a song out that's has something of those, that's fitting for that setting.
Yeah, we'll have to look at that.
We should look at that. So, okay, great.
How many of these have you done, Will?
We've been doing them for about a year, just over a year. So we're probably at like 12 or 13.
Oh, cool.
That we've done. Yeah, like one every month, and we take off, you know, the winter months, obviously. And yeah, I'm really enjoying that people can bring kids, but still try to make it that the music is the focus and not let it get so out of hand that people are talking and so much. Some of the outdoor events, you know, people really start to talk and then the music becomes a background to conversation. So we're still trying to bring over that reverence and respect for listening, you know, to the music, which is what we started with at St. David's. So
great. Well, we're looking forward to it.
That sounds great. So, okay, on to the questions. I'm just going to go through these. There's an artist that I really respect, and I've been studying him, reading his book. It's called Effortless Mastery. You may have just heard about this when I sent you the question. Kenny Werner has a book called Effortless Mastery, and for the last couple of years, the idea of just getting out of the way of yourself as an artist, and it has a relation to kind of mindfulness work, meditation, you know, the idea of just letting things happen, like the song Let It Be the Beatles wrote, you know, their work with the Maharishi. And so I've been very attracted to this idea of getting out of the way of myself as a performer, as a creative person. And there's this quote in here, I'll just kind of read it quickly. You read it, but the you know, ultimately musicians of the world must come to realize their potential of their calling. Like shamans, we may serve as healers, metaphysicians, inciters, exciters, spiritual guides, and sources of inspiration. So if the musician is illuminated from within, he becomes a lamp that lights other lamps. And it goes on. And I was very attracted to that idea. And the fact that, you know, we could relate this to you. You have the Swan Songs organization. But how do you resonate with this sort of... You know, the quote also says... I'm sorry, let me say one more thing here. Then he is serving the planet and its people, healing what ails. Such music is truly important. It is said that only one who obeys can truly command. When the artist is immersed in service, giving himself up over and over again, another paradox occurs. He is being seen by all others as a master. So what resonates with you for that quote?
Well, most of it does. I think all of it does. And I've found lately, especially because I do practice mindfulness meditation, and recently my mind has been very busy because I'm so active in other things. So I'm in a different mindset most of the day, and then I get to the performance, get on stage and start singing. And when I find my mind racing and I'm not really present, I actually close my eyes and practice meditation in between the lines of the song. And that's by focusing on my breath and being in the moment, it brings me back to why I'm there. And then it starts to become a gift to me when I can really get out of my own way. And it's hard for me because there's so much going on in my life and in my brain. But that's the technique that I use. I have my own like personal prayer that I wrote years and years and years ago that I say, like, you know, every morning or especially before a performance. And one of the phrases in there is, my life is a vehicle for divine love and my music is the instrument of expression. Mm-hmm. So that kind of, I think what you just read, obviously it resonates with me because that's what I say to myself.
Mm-hmm. And so you still find yourself... that you have to remind yourself from time
totally.
To time when
very
you
much
get up
so.
There on stage.
Especially with, you know, I have to, it doesn't just it doesn't come naturally, but it's, but the more you do it, the more years you sing, I think, and as a performer and just as a person who's connected to why I do this, it's obvious to me when I'm not connected. I go, whoops, oops, oops. And it's kind of like when you're meditating and your thoughts start to take off and you go, ah, thinking, and then bring it back to the breath. Yeah. And when I'm doing that on stage, I realize, oh, I am really, I am not here. I just, you know, created an agenda in my mind while I'm trying to sing this song, and that's not going to work for the entire performance. And I think I can feel it when I shift back, and I think Chris can
feel
it too. He's all like, okay, you're here with me now. Mm. He knows exactly when I'm not, and even if I'm singing all the right notes and getting all the lyrics, if I'm present, it's obvious, and when I'm not present, it's very obvious.
Well, it's amazing how much you can think about while you play. And I look at it this way.
Exactly.
We spend our whole lives learning and preparing, but when you step on stage and that one person has come because they love your music or they need something out of that evening,
right?
Well, then it's time to just it's the Zen thing. You learn, and then you get on stage and forget everything you've learned, and you have to just let it seep out and explode out. And I know that when I totally forget that I'm taking a piano solo, for example, if I just let it fly, those are the ones that get responded to the most. Not if I'm you know, trying to play like Fats Waller, or if I'm trying to make sure my left hand is in time, you know. If I just explode, those are the ones that people react to.
Right. And I was going to ask you a question about, you know, related to what does a great solo feel like or look like to you? And part of what you're saying is you're so out of the way, you don't really even notice it. That's what you're saying.
Well, it's come from years of doing it, you know. There are solos that musicians have a term that you're very aware of. It's called noodling. And it's just, you know what notes go in this scale, and so you just play some. But to me, a solo is like a whole song itself. It's a whole composition. It has a beginning, and it has a rise. And then it has to resolve itself at just the right time. It has to be emotional. It has to be clever at times, you know. But more than anything, it has to just fit the mood of the piece that you're in.
So I got a little follow-up question with that. Something I've always wondered. Okay, so for me, I've studied as the jazz tradition, and you know, if you look at Charlie Parker or even Louis Armstrong, when they take a solo, I mean, there's the melodic approach. Like with Louis Armstrong, he's always relating his solo to the main melody, whereas Charlie Parker and some of those cats, you know, beboppers, completely are going, you know, they might, you know, paraphrase them a little bit, but they're way off. So when you're, how much are you actually improvising, Chris? Or do you consciously, I mean, does it just sometimes go off completely from the melody? Or do you, as somebody who's a songwriter, you know what I'm saying? Like playing, I hate to say genres, but it's like pop music, folk music, and all that. I mean, do you generally always try to, you know, work off the melody when you're improvising?
You know, in the studio, when I'm trying to get something out of a soloist, I refer to it as melody plus, which is an odd thing.
Okay.
But I don't like to get too far away from the melody, and I'm totally happy with a baritone guitar solo that plays the melody. I think that's beautiful. One of the coolest solos on record, and this also relates to you had mentioned a question about what's your favorite song, but there's a Glenn Campbell recording of Jimmy Webb's Wichita Lineman. Mm-hmm. And when the solo comes in, it's just the melody, and it is so satisfying to hear that. It's better than any hot lick that could ever have been picked by Tommy Tedesco or another guitar player.
Right.
It's just the melody. Do, 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 do. And it's just gorgeous. So there's a lot of times that I will just play the melody and then melody plus, I call it. You got to sneak off and do something exciting, you know, 2/3 of the way through and bring it back to the home base at the end of a solo.
So it's like those little subtle inflections, like on the melody,
sure,
that make it your own, that really bring it into the moment. But this particular melody you're talking about, he pretty much states it exactly the way it is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay. This is from a musician standpoint. I'm always interested to hear other musicians approach that, because the jazz players sometimes will be like, you know, well, that's boring. You know, I don't want to hear the melody over and over and over again. But then if I listen to, you know, some folk or pop records, that's all they do. And it's like you said, it's actually very pleasing to hear, you know, the melody. I don't want to get too far off on that, but I've come from a jazz position and then been around for the last 15, 20 years, been around people like Eliza and you guys, and been pulled back toward, you know, this kind of stating simplicity, and roots music. And so it's been an interesting journey for me to get back to maybe being grounded, what naturally comes up, as opposed to, so, because you were talking earlier about, you know, I've got this classical background, but I've spent a lot of times in the last 25 years just, you know, coming back to, I don't know, am I trying to say, the roots music, you know, which is an oral tradition. It's not a written tradition. So I love it. I love stating the melody.
It's interesting, as a singer, I found, because I'm playing with so many different players now at Mystery Monday, on Monday nights at El Mercado, it's a lot of lead players that jump up there and haven't heard most of the songs we're doing. And so I really am struck by how a soloist impacts the way I sing and what I get from that and the way we interact. And Chris was saying there's a beginning, a middle, a rise, an end. And, you know, really the whole solo can be a mess. But if you end it in a way that really leads into what I'm about to say or sing, I'm always like, yes, that was awesome. There's something about setting up what the singer's about to do next that is part of the role of the solo. If it's a certain kind of solo, I bring that excitement and that energy or that tenderness or that focus or whatever it is. It so complements what the singer is about to do and feeds into it. So I really appreciate that.
Well, and I think that's the role of the soloist, especially in a vocal group, is not to totally draw the attention away from the song and look at what I can do. Mm-hmm. Look at me, look at me, look at me, you know, which is a guitar lick, by the way. Look at me, look at me, look at me.
Right.
That people will do, and that's when they're not considerate of the melody or the vocalist that's about to come back and deliver the song, and it has to relate to the song itself. I think I'm a jazz fan. You know, I love especially the older stuff. I used to love the Miles Davis Quintet records, and I would just get lost in them because half the time I couldn't follow what they were doing. So on a heart level, it doesn't. It doesn't get me, but just washing through my brain and giving me exciting musical experiences, it does that. But on a heart level, I would much rather just hear a great country song, actually. I'd rather hear Lefty Frizzell sing about forgetting to shave that day, you know?
Sure, that's nice. Yeah, I get that. And from working with singer-songwriters for the last 15, 20 years, I enjoy the sideman aspect. I enjoy just that art of laying out and finding, you know, where to fill to complement the song, like you said, and that be right. Just the art of just really leaving space. And then, you know, because from my standpoint, again, like a great song just exists with the melody and the, you know, the lyric, you know, even without a rhythm part, you know, you can just sing it a cappella. So then, therefore, everything that I'm bringing to the table is got to be supportive. It's essentially, I'm not really needed. So I've got to find this beautiful space, you know, where I can just slide a little thing in. So I've really enjoyed that, because I came originally from playing instrumental jazz, and I was all of the material, and I'm playing the solos and the melodies.
Right.
And people are listening, like you said, to that whole thing. And then what I'm trying to do is bring what I'm learning from this, playing with singer-songwriters, back to the instrumental music, you know,
right.
Bring the heart back to it.
And
so.
That's exactly right. And when Christine and I, for example, do a show and we have a new musician with us, including y'all that we're about to play with, we always say, you know, find your spots, but don't forget, we do this all the time without you. I mean, it's all
right.
It's all there. It just needs a little spice and seasoning.
Exactly. Okay, on to the next question. That was good. A nice organic flow. We don't have much time left. Do you have a preferred question?
Well, you asked what we do on date night. We went to see.
Yeah, that's right. That'd be a good one.
We went to see The Martian in 3D the other night. That was a good date night
at Alamo. We actually don't. You know, we don't get very many date nights. We're just always so busy. We play so many, like, weekly things. So he plays every Sunday morning at Riverbend, and we both play Monday at different places. He plays every Wednesday. We're almost always working on the weekends and a lot during studio sessions during the day. So date night, usually we opt for a movie, or if we have a night off, we always want to be with our kids, with our children and grandchildren, so we do family dinners a lot. That's our really indulgent time, is to get the entire family over and cook together, and they're all great cooks, so I get to take advantage of that, because I'm not. but, you know, and our evenings are, we usually, Chris doesn't come home from the studio, and I'm in the office until we usually don't eat until 9:30 or 10 or something, so... we have kind of late evenings together. That's our downtime too, if we're not working.
Yeah, I think it's interesting with Karen and I. You know, I always dreamed of having a musical family, but you know, we do with Coralina. We have some music that we play with her, but it's not like, you know, music all the time in the house.
Yeah.
You know, playing music, because we're trying to take a break from that. You know,
yes.
Is that kind of way it looks like in your household?
Yes. Yeah.
we actually have one album that we play every time we cook, and it's Paolo Conte's Greatest Hits. And it's all in Italian, and we all sing along, even though we don't know what we're saying. But it's the perfect kitchen music.
Yeah,
that's
you had
funny.
Asked also about practicing and what that looks like, and we really don't. We really don't practice. We learn when we have new songs. We sort of learn them as we go on stage. Although I need practice more than Chris does. I'll say we need to sit down and go over this. If it's a new one that we've written, I need to really get it in my brain and figure out what the arrangement is. But quite often it's just as we go, because we're playing so much, and then there's so much, as you know, business to take care of during the day, and with all of my nonprofit work, I'm just kind of like a office person every day. You know, it's just regular office hours, and then you play gigs, and there's always something waiting in the office for you to get back to.
Oh, I got a great follow-up question to this, because it's for me too. Because I spend so much time on the business aspects of things as well, and in this Western world, we're so focused on time and doing, you know, and after all, we're not human doings, we're human beings, you know, after all. And at the times I think, okay, well, if I didn't have to do, you know, all of those business-oriented tasks, if somebody just immediately took that off the table, what would you... If you had more time available, just magically, let's say you had 4 hours appear in your day, you know, what is there anything that you want to take your music to, like a certain, like the next level? Is there something that you would practice? As you mentioned, you don't really practice; you practice on stage. But is there anything that you dream about doing in a new song, or you know, musically, like on your instrument, if you had that extra time, 4 hours a day?
Well, if it was musically, I would relearn to play the piano, to write with it. I would like to write with piano. I enjoy writing with piano, but I hardly ever do it. And I played piano. That was my first instrument as a child, but I haven't played in years and don't really have an intuitive sense of it. So if I was really going to spend indulgent time on the music part, I would reconnect with piano, and I would get my flute fixed because my flute, the pads are so old that you can't even play it. It's so dried out. I would revive my flute because I also played flute for many years. And,
nice.
And I love to play that, but I just haven't put the focus in it onto it. And just creatively in general, I would I really want to write more, just books and essays and prose. Mm-hmm. So I would spend more time writing, which means you have to spend a lot of time unplugged, solitude. Nature helps me. Gardening helps me to get into that space.
And my life is so far from that right now.
We don't
find time for that. I haven't written a song in a long time because I'm so busy working on other people's songs.
Yeah.
All day, every day. And then I take 30 minutes and try to think about what I'm going to do. For example, I've got a show tonight at 6 o'clock with a guitar player I've never played with, and I got to think about what might work between us when I don't have even a clue what his style is. So I'll take 20 minutes and put a little thought into that. But
he's in the studio now working on someone else's music all afternoon.
Right. If I had 4 hours a day, I'm sure I would be composing and working on some tracks for TV placement and writing a new song for Albert and Gage.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this was great. We just took a little extra time, so thank you guys. And I wish I could go on. I just love it. And I'm kind of trying to do these little interviews to, you know, create some interesting content, and where it's from the point of view is I'm a musician, and these are things we share, and I think it could create some interesting conversations that maybe people would like to see, and this could be content that you could have up for years, you know, and just kind of like the Terry Gross. It's like if I was Terry Gross, you know,
yeah,
fresh air, but Will Taylor, yeah. Uh-huh. So I appreciate you being a guinea pig for, like, you know, I'm not the most prepared, but I think it was good. So I enjoyed it. I enjoyed you guys.
Oh. Yeah, thank you. It was a good conversation.
We're going to take a picture of us doing our interview so we can send it along. Here.
Do that. That's a great idea. With the microphone and the studio in the background. Yeah.
There you go.
Okay, well, just so get back to me on those songs and what you want to take out of it, and then Chris, you can just send me the MP3, and you know I'll edit out all the ifs, ands, and buts, and make it a little tighter.
And we'll start looking at the rehearsal day for do they prefer like Thursday or something? Is there a day that week that works best for you guys?
Yeah, closer to the gig is best to me.
Okay, mm-hmm. I'll send you some options there, too.
Okay, awesome. Well, have a great gig tonight. I got one, too. I have to go get ready for as well with Shelley King. And
oh, great.
So, mm-hmm.
Say hi.
So, I will say hi, and thanks, Chris, and
you
we'll
bet.
See you guys
Ciao.
Soon.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.